Of course, I had that fear that, oh gosh, is the quality going to be that good? But then I stopped myself and I thought, even if this isn't perfect, it's still going to be amazing because you're putting your passion into this.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Tami Makinjuola is a Nigerian-born chef, blogger, and author living in London with a never-ending love for food, travel, writing, and cooking. 8 years ago, Tami changed from a meat-based diet to a vegan diet. She explored new vegan recipes and shared them on a blog. Since then, she has hosted culinary events, taught online courses, and published 4 cookbooks, including Plantain Cookbook and 4-week alkaline meal plan. And I am so happy to have Miss Tami Makinjuola. Close. Okay.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, as my guest today, because she is the vegan Nigerian, and you're located in London. We should let everyone know that. You're in London, right?
I'm in London at the moment.
Yes. And you are a vegan chef and a blogger and the author of 4 cookbooks.
Yes.
Okay, great. That's and you're kind of a big deal. I mean, everyone, when I go on LinkedIn, I see so many different posts about you. Your blog is fabulous. I've heard you on a few other podcasts, and so I'm just really excited to kind of hear about your journey. Can you give us, tell us a little bit about your background as far as how you got on this path to becoming a vegan chef?
Yeah, sure. So really everything began with my food blog, The Vegan Nigerian. Now, I was 21 when I went vegan, and at the time I was grappling with a lot of questions as to how to embrace this new lifestyle as a Black woman from Nigeria who had always grown up eating traditional Nigerian food. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I was embracing this new way of living, and I thought, what's the best approach to this? And yeah. So I decided to take more of like a fun route of just documenting my journey through the recipes that I was veganizing and sharing online. And so the blog really began with those simple recipes. I remember like in the first month of putting out my recipes, I maybe had 30 readers on the blog. Mm. And they were, of course, family and friends and maybe one or two random people who like accidentally stumbled upon it.
Right.
And so back then, I had no idea where this blog would lead me. I just thought, I'm having so much fun doing this and let's just see what happens. Mm. And so the more I started to share my vegan recipes, the more of an online presence I began to have. So people started discovering me through there. Eventually, I came onto social media platforms, and that sort of accelerated my reach as well. But while all of that was happening, sort of in the background in my personal life, I started my food blog while I was still at university. And so when I graduated, my plan initially was that, I'll probably do something in publishing because I had studied English and French and it just made sense. Mm-hmm. But by the time I reached the end of my final year, I found myself pivoting completely away from that world. Mm-hmm. By that point, my blog was turning 2. It was slowly gaining traction. And I thought, I really want to delve deeper into sort of what it is to be a vegan chef and be in this world. And so I got my first few jobs working as a vegan chef in London. And really, those were just a great opportunity for me to hone my skills, learn a few new things from the head chef, and just to pick up on what it is like to work within this industry. Now, so I worked as a vegan chef for those years, and I still continued with a vegan Nigerian on the side. And so everything just kind of evolved together. I'm no longer in the restaurant industry at the moment. I'm sort of doing everything self-employed, freelance. But yeah, it's been a journey to get to that point.
Right, right. Okay. So I have so many questions, because when you first started the blog, you weren't yet a chef. Is that correct?
No, I wasn't a chef yet.
You were studying English and French in college. So then how did you have any, because I was actually reading your blog, and I love that you have this post about how as a kid with your siblings, you would do this like restaurant, you would play restaurant where you would actually cook for your parents. So you had some background in cooking.
Yes, I did. I mean, from a very, very young age, cooking was one of my biggest hobbies, cooking alongside writing. Okay. So I would say I cooked my first meal at the age of 10. That was when I asked my mom to like actively teach me a dish. Mm-hmm. And then from then on, I would watch so many cooking shows, try to emulate the chefs on TV. I would devour cooking books and then try to, I guess, put my own spin on it in any way that I could. And so cooking has always been sort of a part of my world.
Yeah. And that's so interesting. So you, as a kid, you loved cooking. So why in college did you decide to study literature or English and French?
Yeah, I guess it's because growing up, I had two loves, right? So there was the cooking, but there was also writing.
Yeah.
And at the point when I went to college, I think writing was kind of edging my in terms of my interest. Writing was at the top. I wanted to write novels. I did go on to self-publish a couple of novels, by the way. So I haven't quite let that side go.
Yeah,
I haven't let that side go yet. But at the time, I thought, oh, I would just love a degree where I can really just lose myself in literature from across the centuries and just like really delve into it, just to like build my own writing skills. Mm-hmm. And so that was the thinking going into it. And then, of course, the vegan transition happened in the middle, and I found myself kind of revisiting this love for cooking once more and seeing that kind of take off.
And I love how you mentioned, so when you started your blog, it was mostly about your journey into veganism.
It was a little bit of that. Yes. It was mostly recipes even back then, even as I was writing the recipes, I would write little anecdotes and little stories about maybe what was going on in my day or why I had decided to try this particular recipe. Yeah. So I just had a narrative going.
And then when you decided to actually study like culinary skills, like go into that industry, how did the, because you mentioned a pivot, so the blog, how did the posts change once you got into the like the culinary chef profession? Were they still recipe based, or was it a little bit more involved?
It was still recipe based, but I found that the recipes I started posting became a little bit more refined.
Okay.
So studying under the head chef at the restaurants, there was a lot of emphasis on plating. There was a lot of emphasis on enhancing certain flavors and certain, just the way you arrange food on a plate, you know. That was something before where I would maybe make a stew and just throw it in a bowl, and that was it, you know. I didn't really think too much about it.
Right.
But I would say, like, at that point, after I started learning a bit more, I took my time and I started to really kind of pay more attention to the quality of the posts that I was putting out. Mm. So it helped me in a tremendous way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And what I really appreciate about that, about how you changed, was that you actually just pivoted. Because I think a lot of people are scared to pivot.
because they feel like if I pivot, I have to change everything. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to change everything. It's probably just maybe a slight adjustment. But a lot of people are so they're stuck on like sticking with their first original idea when that might not be really the path that they should be on. And it seems like you were just open to the possibility, like, let me try this and see where it goes. And it worked out for you.
And see what happens. Because you do never know. Yeah. And the thing I always told myself is that with this degree in my pocket, I could always pull it out whenever I needed to in the future if I needed to. And we'll probably get a bit more into it later. But after working as a chef for a while, I actually left that and did go into publishing for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. So I've had the opportunity to, at this point, try career-wise everything I've wanted to really try. Right. Of course, there's still loads more that I want to do, but I didn't limit myself in any way. And in fact, when I did go in for that publishing job, one of the first things they said to me was, wow, you run a vegan blog? Like, that's so cool. Yeah. And I was thinking to myself, oh dear, they're going to look at that and say that she's confused, she doesn't know what she wants, or like, this is so random. But actually, they loved the creativity, and, you know, it really actually helped me in the end.
Yeah, exactly. Because my major in college was actually music. So I got a degree in music.
Oh, but
as a kid, I always was into writing and reading. But I went on this path of music, and I don't regret it. I actually taught music for about 10 years because, as you say, there are so many skills that come from whatever it is that you study. Like, the creativity part has played a big part in even my writing. The creativity I learned from music plays into my writing. The creativity I learned from music plays into my teaching. So just because you might have studied formally one thing and you don't end up necessarily pursuing a profession in what you studied, that doesn't mean that what you studied is completely for naught. Like, you could still use those skills.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I would even say, just to add on to that, that I've seen my degree come in really handy in what I do right now, because as well as the food, there's also the story that goes behind the food. And even in writing my cookbooks, you know, gaining those skills and the knowledge of literature has really helped me too. So nothing is ever a waste.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing's ever a waste. So when you've mentioned, and I love this, when you first started your blog, you had about 30 readers, and that was mostly friends and family. When you first launched your blog, were you concerned about, like, who's going to read this?
Oh,
wow.
No. My mind just wasn't even there, because at that point, I didn't know much about blogging, and I didn't know much about the online world. In fact, it took me a while to even transition onto social media platforms. I want to say I was dragged on kicking and screaming, but that's probably a bit of an exaggeration. But I just wasn't too aware about the possibilities of blogging. And so I had no expectations going into it.
That's pretty good. Because I think a lot of I've spoken with bloggers and even just reading blog posts and going through social media. I think a lot of people, we start blogs and we instantly want that audience. And when we're not getting the feedback that we think that we should be getting, we get discouraged because, like, no one's reading this, and what am I doing? And then we just ditch the blog. So I think it's great that you were just kind of like open, like, well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. And I think that bit of, what do you even want to call it? Is it naivety? But that shielded me a little bit, because I was able to just continue creating regardless of the response that I was getting. Yeah. And even if one person commented on my post, I mean, that would make my day.
Yeah.
So really, you know, it's just amazing that it's come to where it is right now. But I had no expectations that it would.
Yeah. And so how did, can we talk about your transition from blogger to author? How did that happen?
So, I mean, a few years into blogging, I sort of had the idea that I would love to put out a cookbook. It felt like the right time. It felt like I had been pouring a lot of my free resources out there onto my blog. And so I thought, okay, how can I consolidate everything that I've been doing and put it into a book? And then I began to reach out to publishers at the time. And mind you, this was at a point where veganism wasn't as popular as it is right now. I mean, in the last 2 years, it's exploded. But back then, it was still sort of under the radar. Only a few people were vegan. And so when I would approach these publishers, they would say to me, sorry, we just don't think there's an audience for Nigerian vegan food. You know, it was always the same story. When I would look at the cookbooks that were out there, they were people who didn't look like me, who weren't talking about the food that I was talking about, that my audience would like, really. And so after a series of experience coming across that with publishers, I just thought, well, why don't I just do it myself and self-publish? And so I started with a really mini vegan ice cream cookbook, which is kind of in the shadows now.
Is that the Nice Cream? The book Nice
Cream? That's the one.
I love the title of that book. Yeah, that's such a great title.
Yeah. So I did that kind of as an experiment to see what was possible with self-publishing. And then a few years down the line, I had the idea for the plantain cookbook. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to do this myself. So I did the photography. I did the recipe testing. I got friends to taste the recipes for me and really poured a lot of love and attention into creating it. And by that point, I had a little bit of experience with self-publishing platforms. So I knew which ones to use. I knew how to format it. And so I went through that whole process and put it out there. And I guess because I had already been building my audience all along, bringing them along with me through the journey, when I announced that I was putting the cookbook out, the response was amazing. And, you know, I had a lot of people supporting me, and it's been fun.
That's okay. I love this because you did your own photography.
I did.
Oh my goodness. That's so it sounds like you had a lot of confidence going in, because I can just see people like, oh my gosh, I can't me take my own pictures for this. And I'm not really a writer and blah, blah. Where did that confidence come from?
So the confidence, I would say, came from practice. So because it's not such a big leap from blogging to writing a cookbook, because with blogging you have to take your own food photography. And so I had been learning throughout that point. I'd been learning about lighting. I had been sort of getting inspiration from other bloggers as well, and seeing how they plate their food, how they liked their food. Mm-hmm. And I was taking and absorbing all of that in, sometimes without even realizing the skills that I was gaining as I was going along. And so when it came to putting the cookbook together, I thought, well, this is something I can do, because this is something I do every day already.
Yeah.
And then that's not to say that I didn't have that fear that the quality might not be as good as I wanted. Of course, that fear will always be there for any self-publisher, because the thing about traditional publishing is that they will hire the experts to do all that for you, and you know it's going to be 100%. So of course I had that fear that, oh gosh, is the quality going to be that good? But then I stopped myself and I thought, even if this isn't perfect, it's still going to be amazing, because you're putting your passion into this and people are really going to resonate with that. And they've already been supporting your work, so they're probably going to support this as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was able to quiet that voice a little bit.
Yeah. So the whole blogging process was really preparing you for this moment, for publishing this
book. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. And so how was the reception of the book? Now we're talking about Plantain Cookbook, right?
Yes, Plantain Cookbook, which came out in end of 2018.
Okay.
Yeah, so the reception was amazing. I had, you know, thousands of downloads, and it was actually quite a serendipitous time, because towards the end of 2018, around October, I had reached out to this famous comedian. She's Nigerian British, called Gina Yashere. And I reached out to her on Instagram and I had said, oh, if you're ever in London doing a show, I would love to cook for you and your team. Thinking she would never respond to this, right? But she actually did. She did. And she was like, yeah, I would be interested in you cooking a dinner for me and my team. So it actually ended up being a dinner for her and some of her close friends. And so Yeah. And so when I went there, she was like, oh, bring your cookbook along as well so I can see it. And then she did a little Instagram video, an Instagram story as well about the dinner. And she featured the book in there as well, which got more eyes on it. And I mean, that really kind of helped me in such a massive way, because I suddenly saw like an influx of people coming to check it out. And then, of course, I wanted to do a bit of my own PR. So I reached out to a couple of publications, and a couple of publications actually reached out to me wanting to do like a story on it. And I mean, the one encouraging thing I would say to anyone who is considering doing a cookbook or an ebook is just go for it, because that little bit of your intellectual property and that thing that you make can do so much for you. It can open so many doors. And once it's done, once it's completed, you know, it can go in so many different directions. Because even till today, I'm still getting inquiries about it. And, you know, it was recently featured on BuzzFeed. And so, like, you never know, like, which direction it could go into. So I would say just go for it and just do it.
Oh, my goodness. That's so inspiring and encouraging. Yeah, just go for it. Because you never, yeah. And serendipitous is like the perfect word for that. Because I think maybe we should be clear, because you were starting your own business also while you were writing this book, right? You had did you have a restaurant or how?
What were you? So at that point, I was doing pop-up restaurants in London. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I didn't own a physical space, but what I would do is I would hire out cafes and restaurants, and I would sort of transform it for the night. And then I would advertise it on my social media platforms and get my guests to come along, and I would cook for them. And so that was really my way of taking my blog, but making it more interactive, more physical, actually seeing the faces behind the blog, the people who had been reading it for so long. Yeah. And, you know, I loved it. Obviously, now with the pandemic, I've had to stop those kinds of activities. But before then, it was a blast. Yeah, just bringing people together.
God, it's just so amazing how much comes from a blog, just from starting a blog. Like, it takes you through this big journey. Okay, so you started the blog, you got some readers, then you actually started to get, you met your audience through these pop-up restaurants. So you actually got to know your readers and what they, were you asking them about like their food preferences, or were they telling you about, you know, their road to veganism, or like what were some of the conversations you were having with them?
Yeah, it was always the sort of thing where I would meet them and they would say to me, I'm not really vegan myself, actually, but I just follow you because I want to incorporate more of these meals into my diet, and I love learning about it. And some of them were not Nigerians, and so they would say things like, I tried Nigerian food. Before I met you, I had never even tasted jollof rice or egusi soup, you know, all these traditional meals. And so coming to the pop-up restaurants was an opportunity for them to like try it firsthand and give their immediate feedback as well and say, oh, I've never eaten this ingredient before. This is so cool. Right. And they would just share their stories with me. And in fact, a lot of the people who come to my pop-up, I'm still in touch with them today. We just occasionally we message each other and just to check in. And yeah, it's been like a great way to just build a community and bring some life into it.
Yeah, that community. I think that's a big, someone else, I was talking to someone recently and they were talking about the importance of not just having followers, but actually building a community with people. You're actually having conversations with people and building relationships. And that's fabulous. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that is the key. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now how did, let me see. So you had your first cookbook, right? And it sounds like the feedback that you're getting from your clients, shall we call them? your community. That played a part into the content of the Plantain cookbook?
So not necessarily so. The idea for the Plantain cookbook was a bit more of a spontaneous one. It came from probably me just sitting around one day, and plantain happens to be one of my favorite ingredients mm-hmm. to use to cook. But the way we cook it in Nigeria sometimes can feel quite limited. You know, there are like maybe, I can think of maybe 5 or 6 different ways that I know how to cook with plantain. Mm-hmm. And so the idea just came to me that what if you just blew this apart and came up with 40 different recipes using plantain mm-hmm. to really kind of showcase the versatility of this, but also maybe educate people a little bit more about this ingredient. And so that was where really the seeds of the cookbook came about.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's a pretty good idea. That's very creative. If you only know like a limited way of using a particular ingredient, and you're like, I wonder how many other ways I can do this. And I think we should also mention that Nigerian cuisine is heavily meat-based, is it not?
It is, yes.
Yeah. So the fact that you're a vegan Nigerian is a big deal because
it's pretty big.
Yeah.
I mean, less so now than probably when I started, but I remember I would get messages sometimes from people saying, this is an absolute oxymoron. How can you be a vegan Nigerian? Like, what does that even mean?
Yeah. I have to tell you that I'm a vegetarian, but I did try, before I went vegetarian, I was vegan for 2 minutes. And the thing that I couldn't get over was the cheese. I love cheese. And the vegan cheeses just were not doing it for me. And I have a nut allergy, and I kind of had to be careful because some of those vegan cheeses are like cashew based. But so I did the vegan life for like a month or two. So I think it's wonderful that you did it and just like stuck with it. For how many years have you been vegan now?
Eight years.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Great. Okay, so Plantain Cookbook in 2018. Mm-hmm. What was your next book?
So next book, I brought out a book on traditional Nigerian snacks. Mm-hmm. Quite recently. Actually, before then, I put out a 4-week alkaline meal plan, which included some alkaline recipes as well. Mm-hmm. So that came last year, actually, during the pandemic. I just thought, I actually got, and this is one of the cases where I was listening more to my audience in terms of the content that I created. I was getting more requests for alkaline versions of Nigerian food, because if you search online now for alkaline meals, alkaline meal plans, they tend to come more from like a Eurocentric point of view, and they include recipes and dishes that a typical Nigerian might not necessarily resonate with. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of set myself the challenge of creating like healthy alkaline versions of our food. So I put that into the book and put that out last year. And then this year, towards the end of last year, rather, I put out the traditional Nigerian snacks, which was in conjunction with a course that I created. And so for anyone who doesn't want to do the video course, they can just download and read instead.
Okay. So you offer an online course also?
Yes.
Okay. Is that through your blog?
Sorry?
Is that through your blog? Can people sign up for that course or take that course through your blog, or how do they access that?
So that course is currently on Udemy. Mm. I decided to use, it's like a course creation platform. Mm. Yes. Yeah, so I was sort of dipping my toes into course creation because I thought this would be an interesting project to do.
So
I did it through there.
And so nice cream, where does that come in?
So nice cream was like the first ever project that I did. And that was, I believe it was the summer of 2014. It was a very hot summer here in the UK. And I was eating a lot of banana ice cream.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever tried it when you freeze the bananas and then you blend it and the consistency comes out like ice cream.
I've heard of that. Yeah.
It's so good. So the entire book is based around that, but incorporating different flavors, different combinations as well.
Okay. That's great. I just love that title. I could just sit there all day. Ice cream. Okay. So then now let's talk about like how marketing worked for you. Because I think a lot of people, a lot of bloggers particularly, really struggle with just expanding their audienceship, what am I saying? Expanding their audience, different tools and ideas that they can come up with as far as like reaching out to people. So you actually did a lot of things I think most bloggers are kind of scared to do, like actually holding events where you could talk to your audience like face to face. The course, this Udemy course. It's actually part of that can be a part of a marketing plan when you have some type of course or like this podcast or something that you could host on your blog to increase your readership, social media. So can you tell us a little bit about which ones you use that you think were most effective for you?
Yeah, that is a very good question, because as you say, when it comes to marketing, there are just so many different avenues that you can take, some more effective than others. For me, I would say putting out consistent content on social media was one of the biggest things for me. And I'll go into a little bit more detail as to why that is important. The thing is, people want to see you show up and they want to have a bit more of a connection to the person that they are potentially going to be buying from. Like if you decide to put out a product, it's a lot harder to sell when people don't really know who you are. Like if you just come out of the blue and say, hey, I have a cookbook, people are like, okay. So the advice I would give is don't be afraid to take people along the journey with you. So even before, way before you have any products out there, give them a bit of insight into your life. And I'm not saying you need to show them your entire personal life and go into too much detail, not at all, but show them the process. And for instance, I would take pictures of myself behind the scenes as I was photographing some of the plantain dishes, and I would just post it online just to like keep people updated. And that was a way to keep the conversation going so that it's at the back of people's minds that this is what you're doing. And so the consistency on social media is important. You don't need to be everywhere. I only selected Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter as like my main platforms. And now I know that there are so many, and it can feel very overwhelming to want to be everywhere and do everything. But really, I would say focus on the few that you can manage and do them well. Show up consistently on there. As well as your pictures, make sure you're mixing up the media with videos as well. Make sure that you're paying attention to your captions and that the storytelling within your captions is coherent and captures the values of your brand and captures just the sort of energy and vibe that you want your audience to get from your work. So pay attention to your captions, I would say. And then, of course, you mentioned the event side of things, and that is also very, very important. Of course, it's a lot more difficult now with social distancing and the pandemic, but there is a lot of scope for online events. As we're doing on Zoom right now, Zoom is connecting everyone. So you could even decide to do an online cooking class. If a cookbook is what you're working on, you could do a cooking class where you give a bit of preview into one of the recipes. And slowly but surely, the more you show up consistently for your audience, the more they show up for you, and they will then tell their friends, they will tell their families, and word of mouth is the most powerful thing. It really is, and nothing really beats a word of mouth. But before you can get to the point where word of mouth is a thing, you need to make sure that you are actually putting out that valuable content for them in the first place. It really begins with that.
And you actually mentioned a lot of things that a lot of my guests mentioned, like the consistency in posting, the storytelling aspect of it, like when you mentioned the captions and how even in your posts, you're really telling the story of you and your brand. Like you're telling this, you're kind of taking us, as you said earlier, taking us on the journey of whatever it is that you're blogging about. And I think that that's what's so compelling and makes you relatable, is that you're able to share your story with people, because people want to be able to feel something in your story. Like they want to feel some emotion and they want to be able to connect with you as a person. And it sounds like that's a lot of what you're talking about, is just being relatable to people.
Yeah. And sometimes people can get scared by that because you might feel very vulnerable doing it and you might feel a bit exposed doing it. But it takes a bit of practice to get to that point where you are comfortable with sharing your story in a way that's best for you.
Right.
And also having the mindset that whatever it is you're sharing, you're not only sharing it just to talk about yourself and to big up yourself, but also because you care about your audience and you want them to discover this new cool thing, or you want them to learn something new. Yeah. You know, when you think about the way it benefits them, it takes the pressure off you a little bit more.
Yeah. So that idea of like really serving your readers, serving your audience. Yeah,
absolutely.
That's a big one. And then you also mentioned values, which is huge. Actually, I was talking to a psychologist a few months back, or was it a psychologist or it was a wellness coach, I think. And she mentioned like her values. And then I was thinking to myself, I said, I don't even know what my values are, but it's really important to not only know your own values, but to really understand what your audience values. Because an audience will always gravitate towards someone who shares their values.
Right? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting. Yeah. So be consistent. Make sure your captions are telling a story. Know your values. Know your audience's values. And keep a positive mindset.
Yes.
Yeah.
Keep a positive mindset. Yeah.
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 That's
be cool. Very open to the opportunities that may come your way, because when you're thinking positively about anything you're doing, you're less closed off and you're able to see opportunities as they appear. Whereas I feel like when you have a lot of self-doubt or you're questioning whether what you're doing is good enough, I think sometimes people can feel that off of you and actually prevent you from attracting those opportunities.
Yeah. So how do you balance, because a lot of people, when they hear, keep a positive mindset, that's a turnoff for some people because they're like, think positive. Yeah. Is that even like, how can you think positive all the time? And, positive people, they just don't look at reality. What if you feel like a complete failure or like no one's reading your blog or things aren't going off? How do you kind of bounce back from that? How do you build the resiliency to kind of keep going?
That's a very, very good question. I mean, there are going to be days when you feel down, where you feel like what you're doing isn't working at all. Mm-hmm. And to that, I would say you're back to what I said before about having no expectations with my blog. Mm-hmm. There's a little element of having that lack of expectations. So what I would say is you need to dive deep and question your intentions. Why are you doing what you're doing? Why are you just doing it because you want to be popular or you want to make tons of money? Or are you doing this because this is something you love and you're passionate about? So question yourself first, because I feel like if you're at a place where you're doing something because you love it, then it's a lot harder to be discouraged. Right. And even when things are not working, you will constantly be thinking of ways that you can pivot, because nothing says you have to stay on the same path, like narrow vision, tunnel vision all the way through. You may need to go back to the drawing board and say, okay, if this is not working, what can I do to tweak it slightly? What can I do to like go in a different direction? And it's all about testing, keep testing different things and keep trying until you get that breakthrough, because a lot of the times the reason why people don't get that sort of breakthrough that they want or they need is because they stop themselves from getting there in the first place. So if you stop prematurely, if you give up and throw in the towel, you'll never know what could have happened. If your blog is only getting 100 views and you want it to get 1,000, the key is not to stop blogging and do something else per se. The key is to keep doing it until you reach that goal. And so, just having that, setting your intentions right, first of all, right? And then also just looking at different ways that you can test what you're doing and try a variety of different things.
Yeah.
I think will get you out of that rut,
Right.
Feeling stuck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when you mentioned, when you talk about questioning your intentions, it reminded me of something else I usually talk about, and that's like knowing your why. So I read this book by Simon Sinek. I think it's called Know Your Why. But he talks about why it's important to know why you're doing what you're doing. Like, what is your mission? What is your mission? Like, and what do you want people to do, think, or feel after they've come in contact with your product, or they've read your blog, or what? And I think a lot of people don't really take the time, especially in the beginning, to really think about, what is my why? Like, why am I doing this? That's a really big deal.
You need to find that, you know, and sometimes it's bigger than you, and that is what keeps you going. So take the time. That's like the first step.
Exactly. That's a big first step. Yeah. Oh, Tommy, this has been wonderful. Oh my goodness. So many nuggets of wisdom here. Do you have any closing words of encouragement for writers or bloggers who are just getting started?
Oh, wow. What can I say? I mean, I just wish I could tell every single person that, you know, what you have to offer the world is so valuable and is so worth putting out there. If you're suffering from self-doubt, I just highly encourage you to just take the time to really think about all the different, like, amazing things about yourself, right? I think sometimes it can be very hard for us to even admit what we think is good about ourselves. But if you think deep enough, you will find different skills, different gifts, different talents that, you know, just come naturally to you. And if you're even struggling with that, ask the people closest to you. Sometimes we can't even see ourselves and what we have to offer the world. So ask the people closest to you, you know, what they value in you. And then really just, if you have an idea, if you have a project, just run with it. This is the perfect time to do it. You know, most of us are at home now. And I know that that can feel very stifling and like life is kind of paused. But actually, you can look at it from a different perspective, that this is a great time to really get back in touch with yourself and what you have to offer and really flesh that out.
Yeah.
Just loads of words of encouragement to you. Just do it.
That's great, because it reminded me of something else. Someone was telling me that you should, a lot of times we forget about all of our successes and we just focus on this failure that's in front of us right now. And many times our successes outnumber our failures. And so it might be a good idea, as you said, to write down, I think this is what you write down, your successes and your like winning qualities, so that when those moments when you do feel like, oh God, I just suck right now, you can just go back and look at, well, I overcame this, I accomplished this, I did this. So this, you know, it's just a boost. Yeah, it's a big boost.
Definitely.
That's great.
Yeah. And even with those failures that you might come across, try and look at it from the perspective of what kind of lesson can I take out of this? Rather than this is just a complete fail, I'm never going to even think about this again. Actually, no, think about it. You know, what could have been done better? And realize that some of the people who are at the top of their game right now, who are doing what they love right now, they don't get there without a few failures along the way. It happens. It's going to happen. Prepare yourself for it, you know?
Because something else,
but rise above it as well.
Exactly. And I know I have to end this conversation at some point. I just keep coming up with, every time you say something, I'm like, oh yeah. But when you mentioned evaluating like how your progress, and then seeing where you perhaps need to, you know, change, slightly pivot or whatever, it just reminded me that success is not going to be overnight. Like, this is going to take time. Like, it takes time to build a readership. It takes time to really get to know your audience. It just, things take time. And I think that a lot of people starting out, I mentioned this earlier, we want that like instant success, that instant gratification. We want like 1,000 readers overnight. And it just doesn't happen that way. You have to have the patience and be consistent, as you mentioned earlier, because it's going to take some time.
Definitely.
All right, Tommy. Well, thank you so much. I'm going to stop recording, but I'm just going to chat with you in a minute. But thank you for having me. Thank you for coming. on motivation to write.
No, thank you.
I love talking with Tommy because her story is so inspiring. So many bloggers, we have dreams of our blogs taking us to places that we never knew we could even go. And she's just the perfect example of someone who had an idea and went with it without any real expectation or attachment to a specific outcome. She just wanted to try it and see what came of it. And, you know, wasn't particular about how many followers or readers she had. She just shared her passion and look where it's taken her. So I encourage you to check out her website and her social media, her YouTube, her Instagram, because first of all, the food looks absolutely delicious and I wish I were in London or Nigeria, wherever she is now, so I can have some of her food. And also you can just be inspired by how, excuse me, how creative she is and just get a feel of her energy and her passion. So yes, please check out her sites. And make sure you check out zazo.com and sign up for my weekly newsletter. Be sure to check your spam in case the verification goes to your spam email. You can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Motivation to Write and Twitter at Ebony Haywood. Thank you so much for joining me. And I look forward to seeing you next week. Next week, I have... as my guest, I am looking this up. I believe it is Jeff from, yes, I have Jeff Harry, who is an expert on play. So I don't think you should miss this episode. All right. So I will see you next time. Thank you. Bye-bye.